you're still young enough to aspire to a position at a university. There's nothing wrong with that. Look at Pablo Valle. He has a good life, you know, and he has time, and he's doing his thing. There's a lot of disappointment with academia, obviously. There's always been a lot of disappointment with academia. It's filled with shitheads, you know. It's filled with such idiots that's unbelievable. People with no vocation, with no capacity to teach, with no capacity to do research. They're dead, but there's such good people in academia. And if you are wise enough to be with them and have them as your friends, this is it. There's no other life for a poet. There's no other life for a writer. Or total marginality, which is what Paul in many ways is going through. A kind of marginality where, you know, money is a daily
issue. But if you're not living on the edge, you're taking up too much space. If the choice is to sell out or be marginal, it's no choice.
No, of course. No, I agree.
To play the game, to learn deeply the secret code,
right.
I would rather try and unlearn it. And as long as I can write the poems, that's ultimately the important thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, but it's nice to have good pants and Nike shoes.
Well, you have nice shirt, you have nice pants, so don't cry poverty. I mean, your beard is trim. You don't look like an indigent.
You should have seen me a week ago.
Oh, you break my heart. Guy looks like a king. The first time I met him, he was in the money. So we arrived in Seattle, Washington, this Mark Weiss that he loves, and myself. And he says, guys, I'm going to take you to this Japanese restaurant. I mean, I never ate better in my life. I wonder what that cost, where he got the money from. He probably stole it from the...
It was on the company.
It was in the company, I know. I remember the sake we had and the sushi.
Domestic sake, too.
Yeah.
With Sam, you'll have Otokoyama.
That's right. Yeah, survival. I believe in survival. You know, there are places where you can play by your rules and you will be accepted. It's just a question of finding them. My story at the University of New York is... I had finished my MA and I got into my PhD, and my advisor gave me a free hand. He said, you know, you're smart enough to work on, I was doing Luso-Brazilian literature, and he said, I suggest a certain poet, Cecilia Meireles, a Brazilian poet. He said, she's kind of easy and you can handle her fast, because what I want you is to finish your doctorate very fast. I said, okay. I went to a house in Spain. And I did my dissertation in 3 months. I was finished. Came back, and the guy started becoming, all of a sudden, very orthodox and a pain in the ass. And I said to him, I said, but sir, you know, you gave me free rein, and now you're demanding this, 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 and this. You're asking me for 4 new dissertations. I'm finished. I said, you do as I told you. And I said, no, I don't believe in autocracy. I'm not going to do as you tell me. I think you're being unfair. And he said, either you do as I tell you, or you get out of my office. I said, I'm getting out of your office, and I left. I took that, Lupe to this day is angry at me, I took that dissertation and I destroyed it. Okay, I'm no fool. I did it at a point in my life when at CUNY, the union became very powerful, and I was granted, I had already tenure as a lecturer. My salary was the lowest, but I'm very frugal. My wife is very frugal. We get along very well. The children were very young. My house was paid for. I didn't owe a penny. I've never owed a penny. Never. Thus, with my salary, I could live fairly well. And I managed to save something like $10,000, which was a sufficient amount of money to go during the summers to the house in Spain, spend the 10, come back, and I had my salary waiting, which was the 10 for next year. Just to give you an example. Okay, years go by, and in 1983, the head of the department says, Jose, you and Gregory Rabassa, the translator, are the stars of the department. Gregory is, you know, like, he was at the time an associate professor. Says, and we keep you here as a coolie. You're a lecturer. You've been a lecturer for 16 years, teaching Spanish 1 and 2. So he said, why don't you hand in your dissertation? I said, no. And the guy said, I'm going to talk to the dean about your case. Well, they went upstairs. They spoke about my case. And a year after, and this is part of CUNY's bylaws, they made me an assistant professor with tenure, with a PhD as a poet. It was the first case in the history of this country. This is not a known fact, Paul.
for someone writing not in the English language but in a foreign language within the United States to have that so-called privilege, which is not a privilege. Now, who has this? Mr. Allen Ginsberg. Who has this? Mr. John Ashbery. And I can give you a man who's a millionaire to begin with from his family. And other people that, you know, had access to this concept but were writing in English. I was the first one who got this writing in a foreign language, in this case, Spanish.
Wow.
The second case is a friend of mine, a Uruguayan poet, whose name is Enrique Fierro, who was at Texas, Austin, and he got it too. And when my case was finally approved, I became from assistant to associate to full professor in 3 years' time. In 3 years' time.
Wow.
And it was long overdue. Okay, I won this case. It was a Pyrrhic battle, it was a quixotic battle, but I won this case. And I'm glad I stood firm in there for myself and for the future. I mean, it's in the bylaws. So, the hell with them. And the opposition, the resistance from many colleagues was atrocious, was tremendous. How can you give a PhD to someone because of its poetry? Who can judge poetry? I mean, statements like that, you know? And I had been, at that time, I was being published by the best editorial houses in Spain and Latin America. And I began to have like a real reputation, you know. They couldn't stomach it. The envy, the anger, the you know, I remember once somebody, an idiot, he slams the door as he's walking out of a departmental meeting. And he said, I don't want to be in front of this man who has been given a doctorate without having, you know, gone through the road that one has to pursue. It's not fair. And he's walking out, and I scream at him. I said, before you walk out, let me tell you that you're right. I don't have a doctorate, but there are already 3 doctorates about my poetry. I mean, that doesn't count. The 3 people have done, you're talking about including me as a chapter or whatever in work that you're doing. That doesn't count.
Yeah.
That someone is interested in your work, interested enough to use that work as part of a thought process that's part of academia, and that doesn't count. That's not a point on my side also. So, you know, a lot of things have been faced and have changed. And the dean told me the story a couple of years after that when I won my case, and he was happy about me winning my case. He said, you know, immediately within CUNY, I had on my desk in a week's time more than 30 poets asking for the same thing. But he said, I knew this was coming. And he said very calmly to all those poets, he said, oh, you want the same privilege that Jose Cosar has gotten? Fine. You have to have his curriculum. Show me his curriculum. So I had at the time 40 books published, and they had 1 or 2. So the dean would say, well, when you have another 38 books of poetry, you have access to the same thing. So, you know, they knew what they were doing. And I said to him, the system is smart because you now are extremely liberal doing this, and at the same time you've covered your back because of the standard that I created. And he laughed and says, yep, he said, the bastard, you know? Dinova or something like that was his name.